It's always a good day when the film critics are in the house to run down some of the best independent films showing in town. We've got reviews of the latest Michael Moore film and a new documentary that remembers Gilda Radner. And we've got reviews of the new biopic about the late country music singer-songwriter Blaze Foley and the alleged murderess Lizzie Borden, who hacked her father and stepmother to death for a reason. I hope it's a good one. And best of all, we've got the film critics themselves. They are film professor Cindy Haynes. Steve Walker is here and Bob Butler. Let's go to our first film here, Cindy. It's called The Children Act. It's a British High Court judge in London must decide the fate of a terminally ill teenager whose parents refuse to allow a life-saving blood transfusion. Tell us about it.
It's one of the best movies so far this year.
Wow.
I'm so impressed by it. Emma Thompson is brilliant in her performance as Fiona May, a high court judge who makes life and death decisions about children's lives every day.
Hmm.
It's a very complex story because there's the issue of her family. The relationship with her husband is falling apart, and she's got to deal with that. And I'm just so impressed by that performance in particular.
Well, Emma Thompson's one of our best, right?
She really is. She is. And the film was directed by Richard Eyre, who also did The Dresser and Notes on a Scandal and Iris. He's an excellent, mm-hmm. excellent filmmaker. So it was a perfect pairing. And the story was written by Ian McEwan, who also wrote the screenplay.
Stephen, Robert, what do you think?
I thought it was terrific. It's so smart. I like Ian McEwan's novels anyway, and so seeing this put on screen was great. The whole thing centers around children with medical issues, and the case that she's trying is a 17-year-old Jehovah's Witness with leukemia who needs a blood transfusion, but his religion disallows that. To mix blood equals pollution in their eyes. So she's trying to deal with all of that.
And the young man is Adam Henry is the character's name in the film, and played by Fionn Whitehead, and he does a fantastic job.
Well, is this a heavy downer of a film, Robert, or how do you look at it?
Yeah. Good movie. I don't think it's as great as my colleagues do, but I have to admit I love Emma Thompson.
Mm-hmm.
My main concern was in the latter going, it got a little bit melodramatic. The relationship between the young man who's only like 17 and this judge who, well, we have a clip here where she visits him in the hospital, don't we?
That's right. It's her decision to visit him in the hospital before she makes a decision.
From the Children Act.
Given the unique circumstances of this case, I have decided I would like to hear from Adam himself. I need to know if he understands his situation and what he confronts, should I rule against the hospital. I'll go now to Adam's bedside in the company of his guardian. I'll give judgment in open court when I return, probably after 7 p.m.
Court rise.
Okay, that's from the Children Act. A pretty strong thumbs up from our panelists here. Let's go to the second film, Blaze. It's a biopic about the late country music singer, songwriter Blaze Foley, and I'm interested in it. Cindy?
Steve, I covered country music as a photographer for about 4 or 5 years, and I never even heard of this guy.
Oh, I haven't either. I'm glad to hear you say that.
I don't know what that says about me, but he was supposed to have had a significant influence on the outlaw country music,
mm-hmm.
Waylon Jennings, Merle Haggard, those kinds of guys. And this is one of the most uncomfortable movies I've watched, you know, since.
Uncomfortable? Why?
Because I didn't like the character. I didn't enjoy the music.
Ditto for me.
I thought it was a tremendous waste of time.
You're crushing me here because this was like on something I was going to do this weekend.
Boy, am I the odd man out this week. I'm not crazy about the movie, but here's what I think the director and writer, Ethan Hawke, the actor you know, was aiming for. Blaze Foley himself is not such a sterling character. He's not even really all that interesting. I think what Ethan Hawke wanted was to capture a moment in time before the digital age and our when a guy could literally go off the grid, live in a cabin, write songs, go out and tour, get drunk with his buddies, smoke all the dope he wanted. And it was sort of a Charles Bukowski type thing within the country music world. Mm-hmm. I think that's the attraction for the director. And I think he nails that kind of lifestyle because the story is told in a fractured narrative.
Right.
It feels absolutely accurate to me, but I'll grant you right now, it's not everybody's cup of tea.
No, he's so unpleasant to be around. And I'm really tired, and I'm disappointed in Ethan Hawke for the third, fourth, and fifth billed female in the movie are all either giving lap dances or pole dancing. I think in this time, enough is enough on that.
But the music's not good here.
Not to me.
The dialogue, I thought the music was supposed to carry this thing.
Some of the music I kind of liked. But here's the deal with Blaze. Going to see him in a concert, you were taking your chances. He might just rap endlessly for 20 minutes.
He was his own worst enemy.
Yeah, he
really was.
Okay. Well, let's move on to another film here I'm curious about. This one is Fahrenheit. It's Michael Moore's latest attempt to speak truth to power. Go ahead, Bob.
Well, you don't have to like Michael Moore, and many people don't, to see how this particular movie is the right movie at the right time. It's about the Trump era. It comes in three parts, and it's been very cannily put together. Now, first, let me say that if Michael Moore's documentaries have been up to a certain point fun and games, that's why he's a popular documentarian. They're enjoyable.
Right.
This movie ain't.
Huh.
I'll lay that for you right out there. Part one, how did Trump get elected? Moore posits that Trump never wanted to be president, but his ridiculous comments picked up on an audience and he just sort of swept in.
Michael Moore blames Gwen Stefani of The Voice being the reason that he wound up running for president.
Because she got paid more than Trump did for The Apprentice, and
right.
he decided this would be his way of getting in the headlines.
Huh.
Okay, now,
yes.
Part one goes into Flint, Michigan. That's, of course, Michael Moore's hometown.
That's where he often goes.
It's about the water crisis there and about how it was so mishandled. Not just by a Republican governor Rick Snyder, who was largely responsible for it, but by President Obama, who went in and did something so ridiculous. He gave a pep talk in which he allegedly drank a glass of tap water from Flint, and it was total BS. It was a stunt. The people there saw it, and it so turned them off, they didn't go to the polls. Result? Michigan goes to Trump.
Oh,
we have a clip here of Moore talking to a whistleblower, a woman who was taking statistics on lead levels in children's blood.
This is from Fahrenheit 11.
I actually started working for the health department November of 2015.
This is April Cook Hawkins. She was asked to participate in the cover-up.
I was the case manager here in Flint, Michigan. All of the results in regards to the blood levels, I inputted those numbers and made sure all of those numbers were correct.
And while doing so, she discovered that the government officials had cooked the books.
My supervisor asked if I would go in and help them out with the numbers and not show certain things.
Okay, the second act of this documentary is upbeat. The kids at Marion Stoneman Douglas,
mm-hmm.
the teachers in West Virginia who went on strike for a pay raise, people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in the Bronx running on a progressive ticket. So at this point, you're feeling good. And then he comes in with a rather heavy-handed, but I can't argue with the historical parallels, why he gets into the rise of Hitler.
Mm.
And how it just takes one moment, a Reichstag burning moment, a public terrorist act.
That's where he totally lost me. When I saw that image of Adolf Hitler transitioning into this new section of the film, I thought, come on, Michael Moore. It was way too disjointed. And he's made some really, really good films. I don't call them documentaries, but I think he really missed the boat on this one.
You don't call them documentaries. You call them what?
Each one, I guess, I have a different way of describing, but insightful entertainment.
Oh, okay.
This is the one Michael Moore movie I couldn't go see because I didn't have a mute.
Okay. We're visiting with our film critics, film professor Cindy Haynes, Steve Walker, and Bob Butler about the best indie films showing around town right now. Let's move to one that'll have a certain segment of the population interested, maybe older folks, I guess I mean, Love Gilda. This is a documentary about the life of comedian Gilda Radner, Steve.
It is Gilda Radner, who was on the very first season of SNL. In fact, the very first person hired for SNL. How many years ago?
I did not realize 40? That.
Yeah. So I've been watching
50.
It. I've been 50, I think, or more. I've been watching SNL since high school, so I know who she is. I loved her characters. She made me laugh a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is a look at her childhood growing up, her early work in improv up in Canada, where she met Martin Short when they were 21 and they worked together. And then some of her characters that are very familiar to people, Rosanna Dana, Lisa Lubner. And then, of course,
and you still laugh when you watch her.
Oh, of course.
The old clips of her doing those characters.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they may not mean anything to people who are 25.
Yeah.
But that's what YouTube's for.
Yes. Right. That's right.
That's good. We do have a clip. She's talking about two of her characters. Emily Latella was an old lady who misheard everything. And Lisa Lubner was a nerd that she dated Bill Murray, his ultra nerd. And she's talking about what those characters mean to her.
Okay. This is from Love Gilda.
I only named those people for television, and I put outfits on them for television, but they've always been inside me. After I'm done being interviewed all day, I go right into Emily Latella. I can hardly walk, I can't lie down, everything's stiff. If I have a cold or whenever I'm sick, I'm Lisa Lubner. She's the one that I most often will slip into because she doesn't care what she looks like.
Yeah. Okay.
Remember Bill Murray playing Tad?
Yes.
Oh, Tad.
Tad. Yeah.
What's interesting about this documentary, though, and I think it's a little light. I think there's
a little surfacey stuff here.
Exactly. But her unhappy childhood and her eating disorders, I had no idea what a profound effect they had on her.
You would never know it, but the shots of her as a child, she's pretty chunky, and there's a lot of talk about that as she goes through her life. Yeah, you know, it was a sort of a surfacey kind of film, and maybe it's only because you wanted to hear more from her about what was behind her art, fueled her.
Yeah, speaking of her childhood, she said at one point, thinking of that trauma of being the kid who's picked on because she's overweight, I could be funny at what I didn't have instead of worrying about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was funny. You can tell in the old home movies, she was making people laugh since she was three.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you almost wanted to hear from more other comedians about what was it about her comedy that just worked as well as it did. Because,
and
I felt the
same way. Melissa McCarthy was interviewed and Amy Poehler, but I just didn't see the connection with Gilda Radner.
What you did get was a sense of respect for her and what she was able to do. And I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, she was adored and held in high esteem by all the present women on SNL, who, I have to say, Kristen Wiig, Amy Poehler, in retrospect, make me laugh harder and longer than Gilda did.
Hmm.
But maybe that's because it's more recent.
But Gilda was something of a pioneer.
Absolutely.
And that certainly comes through, and she paves the way for the women you just mentioned.
And they should have talked more about how male-heavy SNL was in its early days. Those women, Lorraine Newman, Jane Curtin, and Gilda, have talked a lot about their ideas were just poo-pooed away.
Yeah. Let's go to a film, Lizzie. In 1892, the alleged murderess Lizzie Borden hacked her father and stepmother to death for a reason, Steve.
Allegedly, Steve.
Allegedly. It doesn't say the alleged murderess.
And like Gilda Radner, this is a blowback even farther than Gilda, is Lizzie Borden. I asked a 23-year-old coworker of mine who listens to the show, you know the Lizzie Borden story. Lizzie Borden took an axe, gave her... He goes, no.
Yeah. Well, it's sort of faintly the back of my head. But
anyway, it's legendary, and she allegedly killed her father and stepmother with an axe, brutally, violently. Mm. And this movie, Chloe Sevigny plays Lizzie. Her parents are really horrible. And then they hire a maid from Ireland who comes in, and that's played by the great independent actress Kristen Stewart, who's very seldom lets us down.
It's, you know, late of the Twilight series. Come on, guys. She has come so far.
Oh, yeah. She's always worth watching. Anyway, she's a maid, and they sort of have a relationship. But the director, who's a male, I believe, his whole take on this is a very feminist slant that
Craig William McNeil.
Women were so oppressed that the only logical conclusion to oppression day after day after day from her father was to take an axe to him.
Mm.
And it's not done in a blackly comic way at all. It's just gives you food for thought.
Well, the father, played by Jamie Sheridan, is actually, you know, sexual predator who's taking this new housemaid and virtually raping her on a regular basis. The sly thing about this is she was acquitted on the murder charges.
Mm-hmm.
And what makes it kind of delightful in a perverse way is that the male jurors were so wrapped up in their idea of what women were and what men were that they could not conceive of such a well-bred woman who grew up in such a respectable household.
Right.
They could not conceive of her doing something like that. It had to be some interloper.
Right.
And they were undone by their own ignorance.
Well, in the house, her parents knew because she would talk back. She would leave the house and go stroll through the town when women weren't supposed to do that. I think it was very well done.
We have a clip here from it.
We do. It's when Lizzie Borden meets Bridget, the maid that's come to their home.
From Lizzie.
You'll have to excuse me. I'd completely forgotten she put you in here. Such an awful little room. We have possessions stashed all over the house. Not enough closets, I'm afraid. My name's Lizzie.
Call me Maggie, miss.
None of that Maggie or Patty business. Just picking a name out of a hat for every boy or girl that comes from a certain place. It's terrible. What's your proper name?
Bridget.
That's from Lizzie. Is this a sort of a classic horror film? Is that what this is?
Well, it's very effective as a psychological thriller. It really works. But it's also a lesbian love story. I don't think we've emphasized that enough.
Right.
Hmm.
Okay. When someone says, I wonder if Mr. Borden had any enemies, and I think one of her lines is, every man with a pulse has enemies.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, that film again, Lizzie, it's playing at the Fine Arts Theater in Barry Woods 24. Let's go to a film, The Wife. A devoted wife sacrifices her life and career to support the career of her husband, who's on track for a Nobel Peace Prize. This one features Glenn Close, who just might win an Oscar for it. What do we think? Cindy?
I really enjoyed the film. The performance by Glenn Close, I thought, was very effective, but it wound up somewhat histrionic toward the end of the film, which I found rather disappointing. It was based on the 2003 Meg Wolitzer best-selling novel, and Glenn Close plays Joan Castleman, who has devoted her life to her husband, and it's soon, I guess we don't want to reveal too much here about what happens.
Well, he's a huge famous novelist, and it turns out perhaps she had more to do with his style of writing.
And you're seeing more and more examples of that as the film goes on. Annie Stark, who's actually Glenn Close's 30-year-old daughter, plays Glenn Close's character as a young woman, and Meryl Streep has done the same with her kids, so...
Hmm.
Little trivia aside here. And Christian Slater plays Nathaniel Bone, who wants to write this character's biography. And he's played by the husband is played by Jonathan Pryce.
I have to say here that I think this is one of the best performances Christian Slater's ever given because he's both sleazy and at the same time plausible. I mean, he wants to write a biography of this great man, and he's being stonewalled because he might find out more about the great man than they want him to.
Yeah.
There's been some buzz about Close's performance in an Oscar. She's been nominated
read
six times.
She can communicate all this emotion just with movements of her face.
I wasn't convinced. And her performance is so low key that only at the end when she can't take it anymore, when her anger comes to a boil, does she really give us any fireworks at all.
Cindy, we have a clip here from The Wife.
Yes, they're on an airplane going to pick up the Nobel Prize, and Christian Slater is trying to ingratiate himself to the couple.
Excuse me, Mr. Castleman. There's a gentleman in the back that says he knows you and would like to say hello. Nathaniel Boone.
Tell him. Sorry to interrupt. Thank you. I just want to say congratulations.
Hello, Nathaniel. I take it you're not flying to Stockholm purely for the pickled herring?
No. I wouldn't miss your award for anything. It's truly an astounding achievement, Joe.
Not about the priors, Nathaniel. It's about getting up the gumption to write the next book.
Absolutely. Well, that is why you are who you are. May I also say congratulations to you as well, Joan? I don't think people give the spouse enough credit.
I'll give my wife credit. I give her plenty of credit.
That's from The Wife. Sort of mixed reviews from our critics. We're talking about the best films showing around town, independent films mainly here. Let's go to a film that I think had people kind of interested in it. Pick of the Litter, Steve Walker. It follows a litter of puppies from the moment they're born to their careers as guide dogs for the blind.
If you're the kind of person who hears the word puppy and your heart starts to melt, does not fall into that category? It's about five service dogs in training to be guide dogs for the blind. Mm-hmm. We meet them the day they're born as they're coming out of their mother and go through their training as some shine. And the trainers realize this is a strong possibility. This one may have it. And then
statistically, two out of eight are the only ones that make it.
Right. That's and they amazing. Call it career changed when it proves true that the dog's not going to be a good service dog.
Yeah.
It's a sweet dog. And, mm-hmm. It goes off and lives with some other people.
Happy family. Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty darn cute.
Here's the thing. Oh, go ahead.
I'm just curious. Is it like a reality show where
competition?
Like which of the...
You know what makes this work on a couple levels for me? First, they don't go out of their way to make the dogs the center of attention. It's basically about the people who have volunteered to take a dog into their life for a year with the knowledge they're going to give it up.
I know. I couldn't imagine
being that
person.
It's a heartbreaking situation, but some of these people have done dozens of these dogs. Their family raises them for a year. They take notes. They are tested periodically for temperament on the dog.
And
sometimes the dog's failure is the human's failure.
Yes,
the human trainer screwed up.
And we also meet the people who are blind who are waiting for their dogs.
Including a guy from Kansas City.
Oh, that's right.
I really found this to be an inspiring movie, but not for the awe reasons I thought going in.
No, but they're labs. I mean, come on.
We have a clip
of them at the Seattle airport trying to help the dog learn how to navigate an airport.
This is from Pick of the Litter.
You ready to go work?
Yeah, you are.
Let's go. We're at SeaTac. We're going to do a really big outing today with the puppies.
Nice.
They're going to take us through security all the way to boarding an aircraft.
She's been doing really well. She's probably one of the better pups we've had at this age. Tends to be very responsive to the training and whatnot. A little bit distracted by people. Likes getting interaction and seeks out people a little too much, but we'll work through that.
This is so much. She's really overwhelmed.
Okay.
I just think it's sweet. I really enjoyed it. And there is the story about which dogs are going to make it, which aren't, and which
it's amazing
which
how selective this whole process is.
Oh, unbelievable.
Picking up. Yeah.
Boy, the training is intense.
Yeah.
And for 2 years, right, Bob?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you've convinced me to go see it. I was surprised it held over.
I think the word of mouth on it's been pretty solid.
It moved from the Tivoli to Screenland, actually. It's now playing at Screenland and the Crossroads.
Okay, let's go to the bookshop. Bob Butler, this is a book lover opens a bookstore in an old house in a fictional coastal town in 1959 England, despite opposition from arrogant locals. How could they oppose a bookshop?
Okay, here's what I love about this movie. When it starts, you think you know exactly what it's going to be. Here's a war widow, 10 years down the road, goes to this little town, opens a bookstore. So my cynical hat says, okay, she's going to introduce literature to the poor, benighted slobs who live here. She's going to probably even get away with – she's going to overcome a censorship thing because she wants to sell Lolita. And she'll end up with some hunk, a fisherman, no doubt. None of that's true. The movie turns it inside out. What you've got here is Emily Mortimer as Florence Green, who comes to this little town, opens a bookstore in an abandoned building. That was her mistake. She picked an abandoned building that the local gentry, a woman played by the great Patricia Clarkson, years ago thought would be a nice spot for a community center, but never did anything about it. And now that this woman has a flourishing bookstore, she gets to work to mess things up. We got a clip here. It's at a party where Patricia Clarkson is, well, what shall I say, being snooty to the newcomer in town.
From the bookshop.
Thanks
such a pleasure.
For inviting me.
Such a lovely party.
Everyone is talking about your new venture. You have such a great news for business.
Well,
you know, yes, but have you been introduced to my husband? Come and tell Mrs.
Green.
How delighted we are to see her. And to think we've all been praying for a good bookshop in our little town, haven't we, Bruno?
Of course, my dear. There's no harm in praying. Things would probably go much better if we all prayed more.
One of the things I like about this movie is Bill Nighy, who plays kind
of this
movie's version of Miss Havisham, a guy who lives in a decaying mansion and reads voraciously. Mm-hmm. And, of course, having a new bookstore in town is a big deal for him.
I think it's okay. It was on my 3 to see the weekend it opened. But I have to say, Patricia Clarkson, I'm a huge fan of hers. She's so miscast in this movie. It hurt it.
But Emily Mortimer's
always good. Yeah, exactly.
I'm getting sort of mixed reviews for the bookshop, if I'm hearing everybody right here. We just have a little bit of time left here. One film you all, are pretty high on, Operation Finale. Tell us about it, Cindy.
Well, Steve, if you don't mind, I'd like to mention the Best Film Festival in Kansas City is coming up October 12th through the 18th. It's the Kansas International Film Festival. 150 films from around the world. Also, local filmmakers are being featured at the Glenwood Arts Theater. And go to kansasfilm.com for detailed information. It is fantastic, and they're going to be showing Tea with the Dames. It's going to kick off the festival on October the 11th.
And you guys are very high on that.
Oh, with Joan Plowright, Maggie Smith, Judy Dench, Eileen Atkins. It's fantastic. So do support this local film festival.
And in 10 seconds, you all really like Operation Finale, as I was
saying. I think we all did, right. Yeah. But time just gets the best of us sometimes, you know?
Absolutely. Okay, well, we are about out of time here. I want to thank our film critics, Cindy Haynes, Steve Walker, and Bob Butler.